Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for January 9th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. And we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Also this half hour, Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good says producers should not get too caught up in trade talk that the 2013 corn crop will be much, much larger than the drought-stricken 2012 crop. And we'll get the latest in agricultural weather from the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Here are your last trades and settlements for this Wednesday afternoon. In Kansas City, March wheat 802 and now 801 and three quarters down 7. July is 818 and three quarters down 6. Those were last trades. Last trades in the corn pit, 693 up 4 1/4. July at 689 and a quarter up 6 1/4. December 580 and 3/4 up 3. Settlements over in the wheat pit in Chicago, March 745 and a half down 5. July 761 and a half down 5 3/4. Back to last trades in the soybean pit, January 1420 up 6 1/4. March 1385 down 1 1/2. July 1372 2 1/4 down 1/4. November 1288 and a half up 2 3/4. Last trades in soybean meal, January 412 up 140. March 410 down 90. Last trades for January soybean oil at 49.35 up 21. March 49.62 up 9. February live cattle 131.80 down 75, and January feeders 151.72 and a half, and they are down a dollar. Those are your last trades and settlements in Chicago and Kansas City.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says that cold air will pool into the western U.S. Thursday into the weekend, with some of it lingering next week. Temperatures in the eastern U.S. will be trending much warmer than usual. The contrast in air mass temperatures sets the stage for another storm or two to develop in the Delta or southeastern states and move northeast. These storms will produce abundant rain in the eastern U.S. and slowly bring greater amounts of snowfall into the plains ahead of the coldest air. Rain in the southern U.S. plains today and Thursday will be welcome in cotton, corn, and sorghum production areas, and wheat will benefit as well. Northern U.S. plains and upper Midwest areas will be warmer than usual into Thursday with some melting snow. Bitter cold air will move into the region, but not before new snow falls across the region, and that will evolve in the second half of this week and into the weekend.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. A quick programming note. Friday morning, USDA is releasing its reports during the open outcry at 11 a.m. Central, that for the first time ever. So in response, we're adding a new on-air segment just on USDA report days. The segment will air between 12:20 and 12:29 p.m., and we'll feature analysis to the numbers, reaction to the numbers, and the assessment of the longer-term implications of where commodity markets might trade in the days after the report release. We hope you will tune in this Friday, that at 12:20 in the afternoon. Joining us now to talk about the markets is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Looking at the market, and it was years ago, I mean, not so long ago, you would say, gee, we saw a 4.25 cent move in March corn. That was a big deal.
Yes. Yeah, and today it's not such a big deal. In fact, I probably have heard the terminology paint drying more often in the last few days than I've heard in a long time. And it's the truth. I mean, you know, we have a market that isn't sure where it wants to go. You know, the futures themselves are saying, we want the beans. You know, the March-May spread basically is about 11 cents apart at the moment, and definitely telling you that they want the beans. Country cash bids are saying we want the beans, in contrast to what we've been doing in the marketplace, you know, as far as sliding lower. You know, I looked this morning, Dave. I know we didn't talk about it earlier, but in China overnight on the Dalian, beans were at $22.86, and corn was at 11.03. That's up for the 10th week in a row in that region. And so when you start to look at that, maybe it begins to make a little more sense out of why we're seeing some cancellations coming here. Local bids for, you know, to the local producers in China are getting higher all the time. And therefore, you know, they're going to look to try and buy for a cheaper price somewhere else, you know. And so that's exactly what's happening. But I think that should make all of us here in the U.S. stand up and say, holy cow, those prices are high, and we probably will have to expect to see China try a few more games to get our prices at a lower level so that they can buy more.
Maybe they fired the first shot at a new game this week when they went out and asked for some option origin corn.
That's exactly right.
Excuse me, option origin soybeans.
Soybeans. That is, I think that kind of was the first shot. You know, we've never really seen them do that. And perhaps that's also a statement on the fact that when you look at how tight our carryout number is, you know, they want to make sure that they've got plenty available to them. But I do think that's an additional shot, and we're going to see more shots like that unless their prices begin to weaken, and I doubt if that's going to happen anytime soon.
Meanwhile, we continue to get estimates from folk other than USDA on the size of crops, including, I think, CONAB came out with some numbers recently for South America.
Well, they did. And, you know, that's going to be a big question for Friday's report. They raised the bean crop expectation to 82.7, corn up to 72.2. You know, if they do indeed produce 82.7 million metric tons, that means that Brazil is going to surpass us as the biggest producer of beans. You know, the unfortunate part about the whole thing is, and it's not that long ago that we have to remember back to when corn was in their $2 level and how we get a decent corn price and suddenly we'd have fence row to fence row corn and then we'd have a crummy price. Well, it's the same thing, you know, when you look at South America. We've got a really good price due to the drought. They're just increasing acres dramatically, and ultimately it usually ends up wrecking the price is basically what happens. And so I don't doubt, you know, I mean, From the mentality of what a person's trying to do, they're okay if they've got themselves protected. But if they don't, it's not a good thing. You know, Argentina is starting to go to above normal temperatures again. So that's going to be another question that comes up. I think for the report on Friday, the biggest question will be, will the USDA adjust any of the South American numbers this early in the game?
Well, there are certainly cause to. I don't think you would see a big swing at it. Maybe you only see a half million instead of a full million.
Well, I think that's true. You know, USDA is usually quite hesitant to do a bunch of jumping around and make any big moves, although I guess I probably should bite my tongue on that because we've seen some pretty crazy things in the last couple of years happen. But at this stage, I think there's just so many questions about what's going to happen and what the weather's going to be like, you know, here in the U.S. as well as in the rest of the world. But reality is, you know, the trade is looking at it. They're saying we're going to plant a tremendous amount of corn acres this year and a huge amount of bean acres. There's going to be an increase in planting in the rest of the world. And therefore, the assumption is that we're just going to have a much larger crop. And the likelihood of back-to-back major droughts like we had, even though 2012 was the warmest year on record in the lower 48, you know, that is a that's going to be the big question as we go into the actual planting season. But for right now, we're getting some snow, we're getting some rain in some places, and everybody's pretty quiet.
So the last number of years, I think it's 5 years now in a row, we've had a limit move in corn on this particular reporting today. I call it the Super Bowl because we have four major reports, including the USDA annual crop production report, including the, if you include the January, you have five, but it's the annual everybody will be looking at. Make the case for a move this time because it just doesn't seem like on the face of it you're going to see a big move.
Well, you certainly wouldn't think that, although I believe that there's some pent-up buying sitting here on the side. Your funds like to buy when you have low volatility, and we certainly have low volatility in the corn market right at the moment. We're sitting on some major support and have been testing some major support. I think the only thing that could perhaps support a limit move in this market would be that we see the ending stocks for corn come in below the 8.2 average guess. If that's the case, that certainly says that there was a bunch of feeding of that early corn that was actually harvested before September 1st. That says that we still had a lot of livestock out there. And then if they do come in and actually lower harvested acres, even though it would force yields higher, you'd be in a situation where you'd have a lower production level. And now the wild card will be how much of the exports will they remove? You know, and if they don't remove a lot of exports, we come in lower than 667 or maybe even at that 647 level like we were last time, I think you could see a lot of pent-up anxiety here and a lot of pent-up buying, and it would take it. But I think that's about the only thing that could do it, and then that will be tempered by what type of report we actually have for beans or wheat.
You know, growing up, one of my favorite things to eat for a snack was Twinkies and milk. I can no longer get the Twinkie, and I guess as of today, I can get a little less milk than before.
Well, yeah, it's really sad. You know, it's Hostess, and now it's Golden Guernsey Dairy. Golden Guernsey Dairy in Wisconsin has been around for well over 80 years. I don't know how many of you have ever seen the ads for it, but they always had Gertrude the Bossy. She was this huge, huge cow, okay? And Saturday morning when employees got there, they were told not to bother, and the truckers who were coming to haul milk, and they are a big supplier of school milk as well as supermarket milk in Wisconsin and in other places, they just closed their doors after 80 years. And so I'm sure it's not the first that's going to go in all of the consolidation we've got going on. But the sad part is that what really happened was Dean Foods owned them. The Department of Justice stepped in and said Dean Foods had too large a portion of the market. They sold these guys off to some investment company out of California who basically gave them 1 year, and they increased their sales by 20% last year, but they could not get any concessions from the labor union, and so they decided not to fight and roll over and just quit.
Well, on that note, we'll have to let it go. Thank you, Jackie.
Well, thank you, Dave. Have a good one.
You too. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Hi, this is Todd Gleason. Hey, join me January 25th for our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. We'll share a little Illinois wine, eat some great Grand Championship pork, hear stories from Paul Cooley, do a little Ag Outlook with Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Steve Freed, and Gary Schnittke, and best of all, dine with Orion Samuelson. Your $100 ticket buys the meal, the show, and a signed copy of the Big O's new book. Even better, the funds raised will support the College of ACES Agricultural Communications and Hospitality Management programs. Register today at willag.org or call 217-333-9355.
In agricultural news, Cargill Incorporated's fiscal second quarter earnings quadrupled. Cargill says that more fundamentally driven markets helped earnings in the second quarter, especially in its grain origination and processing segment. The company reported earnings of $409 million for the quarter ending November 30th, up from $100 million a year ago. The company said profits climbed in four of its five segments. The exception was its food ingredients and applications segment, in which earnings fell slightly. Brazilian crop agency CONAB today made only small changes in its forecasted production of soybeans and corn. The agency increased its estimate for soybean production to 82.68 million tons from 82.63 million tons a month ago. CONAB now sees corn output at 72.19 million tons, up from 71.94 million tons that it forecasted in December. Brazil consultancy Safras says that Brazil's main center-south sugarcane harvest later this year should yield a record 600 million metric tons. If the forecast is accurate, the 2013-14 crop will be 15% larger than the previous year. Safras sees exports of ethanol rising 5.3% in 2013 to 1.98 billion liters. Private exporters today reported to USDA option origin sale of 120,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to China during the 2013-14 marketing year. The commodity may come from the U.S. or one or more of other exporting countries. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Consensus is building in the agricultural trade for a much bigger 2013 U.S. corn crop. But as Todd Gleason reports, an Illinois ag economist thinks it's best for farmers to mostly ignore the guesses.
Fervor's been building in the commodity markets for an absolutely astounding corn crop in 2013. The number of acres the trade expects will be planted to corn later this year is enormous, but not unprecedented. Some accounts are suggesting 97 million acres, others 99, and some even higher at 100 million acres of corn. The last time that figure was reached was during the mid-1930s. Well, University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good sees them all as mostly blather.
Well, I think we start by saying early acreage estimates should be heavily discounted. I mean, there's just not enough information to make really very accurate or very confident estimates about what farmers are going to do. I'll remind our listeners that even USDA waits till March to do a survey of intentions, and then we see year in and year out that acreage differs quite a bit from intentions in most years. A couple million acre deviation from intentions is not unusual. So to think that farmers know at this point what they're going to plant, or that you can accurately estimate that, I think we have to discount those numbers.
Having said that, Darrell Good says there is some danger the very high price of corn could entice farmers to plant too many acres of the crop. The notion depends primarily on the corn-to-soybean price ratio. It can tilt the scale in favor of one crop or the other. That happens, by the way, in low and high price situations. Here's the real problem for 2013.
If we do see any kind of return towards trend yield, the message would be we really don't need more corn acres in 2013. And so unless prices change, I think there is some danger that we can overdo it. We argued through much of the early part of the past decade that the corn market was not reflecting enough yield risk, that we kind of had this concept that corn yields are bulletproof and are going to go up every year. And so when we looked at new crop prices, they didn't really reflect much of a production risk. I think we've maybe this year swung the other way a little too far. The market kind of thinks it's never going to rain again, and it's building in more than the normal amount of yield risk for 2013 that that I don't think is really warranted at this point.
Some price adjustments are needed, thanks good, to reduce the motivation to plant corn acres, mostly an adjustment in the corn-to-soybean price ratio. Otherwise, 2013 will be set up as a very serious bumper corn crop year. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with Cash Grain Analysis is Ben Stoller of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Ben.
Good afternoon.
Big reports coming out on Friday. I suppose that has been a topic of conversation over at the Andersons.
It certainly has been.
What is the drift of the talk?
So, well, certainly looks like the trade estimates are for the corn and bean yields to be up slightly and harvested acres to be down. But the real concerning thing, in my opinion, is on the corn side of it. Just we've had such poor exports, I could see the USDA lowering the export number and that being, giving us a little bit more in our carryout. So I am somewhat bearish going into it at this point.
Quarterly grain stocks report could be interesting because there are many that believe that some 700 million bushels of corn essentially were used up, quote-unquote, as old crop stocks when we were moving from old to new.
Certainly, yeah. It'll be interesting to see that number with the harvest that we had. And early start, it's kind of hard to get a good solid number there.
And the other thing, I suppose, particularly folk like you might be thinking about is what percentage of the crop still remains in producer hands. Particularly in the corn. I mean, last fall we had the aflatoxin issue in our part of the country.
Certainly.
And because of that, a lot of producers went ahead and passed on the risk to the commercials. And it'll be interesting to see originally what crop is where.
That's certainly the truth. I mean, we saw that in our area as well. I mean, a lot of producer movement at fall, and there's a number of guys that don't have anything on farms. So it's certainly different ball game.
What's your anticipations for basis post report?
It certainly depends on the report. If the market stays weak here, I think we see corn basis rally. We've seen limited farmer movement. In reality, they're not moving it until the market gets a little bit stronger. So if we see a bearish report, I would expect basis to move stronger fairly quickly.
Is there any beans out there to be had?
We're definitely seeing some bean movement. We're certainly seeing bean basis strengthen at the processors. So I think there certainly are some beans out there, seeing some movement right now.
Ben, what about your prices today?
Cash price at Clymers, $7.22, Delphi, $7.13, and beans at Delphi, $13.90.
Thank you much, sir.
Thank you.
That's Ben Stoller of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. And in 2 minutes, I'll be back with the folks from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Apricot Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1788, Connecticut became the fifth state in the Union. The tiny state suffered under the Articles of Confederation. Faced with heavy import duties to New York, Connecticut found it difficult to rebuild its economy after the war. In 1843, William Headley died, an English coal mine manager. He was a pioneer in the building and design of steam locomotives that featured simple friction between wheels and rails instead of geared track. He patented his idea on March 13th of 1813, and later that year, his locomotive, Puffing Billy, began to pull coal on a 5-mile line. The engine remained in service till 1864. In 1858, Elizabeth Gertrude Knight Britton was born, an American botanist. Her efforts were a major factor in the establishment of the New York Botanical Gardens. In 1914, Henry Ford established the unheard-of sum of $5 a day minimum wage in his factories. The wage at the time was just $2.34 for a 9-hour shift. Ford not only doubled the wage, he cut an hour off the workday. And in 1992, Hans Jenny died, a Swiss agricultural chemist. He developed numerical functions to describe soil in terms of 5 interacting factors: climate, organisms, relief, parent material, and time. His book, Factors of Soil Formation, published in 1941, is a classic. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at agricultural weather is Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Josh.
Hey, Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. You know, I've got my suntan lotion going. I got my beach shoes on. I mean, it's almost 50 degrees out there right now.
I guess you hear the January thaw, and this year's January thaw is upon us here the next couple of days. Just unseasonably warm and what will be windy conditions, too, here across the Midwest and the state of Illinois. Temperatures here in the 50s, even pushing some 60-degree readings. The warmest day of this week will be Friday, when widespread 60s should be seen across the southern parts of the state. 50s up here in the north, even pushing maybe 60 in Chicago. And just looking here at Springfield, the record high on Friday, 67. That was set back in 1890, and the record high min is 54, set on the same day. Overnight mins are going to be very warm, too. So enjoy that. You know, suntan lotion is a good idea when it gets this warm here in January, of all things, for 3 to 4 days before the cold front comes by the end of the week.
Uh-oh, you hinted at an Isaac Newton, what goes up must come down, huh?
Yes, yeah, we have so with the unseasonably warm temperatures, a pretty good Arctic shot is going into the western U.S. at the same time. That's partially why we're so warm here in the Midwest. The cold front comes through late in the day on Saturday, and then actually some Gulf moisture tries to tangle up with that front, and we have some prospects for snow across portions of the southern parts of Illinois, maybe eastern parts of Illinois, too. It doesn't look like it gets as far north as Chicago and then points east. So that also could be a mix of freezing rain. So travel on Sunday in particular would be something to watch out for. Is it snow, is it rain, or freezing rain? A little early to tell yet, but that'll be the next weather system to watch from a winter weather standpoint.
So we got rain coming in on Thursday, and then we've got freezing rain coming into the weekend, and then snow following that.
Yeah, freezing rain would probably be on the onset of that snow prospects here on Sunday. And then by Sunday night, Monday, the front's off to our east, and we get back into a bit more of a seasonable pattern next week, and none of these 50s in the north and 60s in the south.
And, you know, we're still keeping an eye on the western Corn Belt because it's still too dry. And I guess, if I'm understanding the charts right, Nebraska, Iowa, parts of South Dakota, southeastern Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, miss this?
Yeah, there's this low-pressure system here today across Texas. That's going to move north over the next 48 hours. That brings our rain chances here to Illinois on late Thursday night into Friday. The eastern parts of Nebraska, Iowa, Dakotas, they get into some of that rain on that event. It's not a widespread producer. It certainly is not an event that would materially change the situation from a moisture standpoint or from a river transportation standpoint. And then once the Arctic front clears on Saturday and Sunday across the Midwest, it's another dry week on tap next week with no signs of any precip.
Thank you, Josh.
All right, Dave, thanks.
That's Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Aggie newsletter before Friday's release of the 4 major crop reports. You can do that at willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.